Ari asked me to speak to the subject that might be relevant, and young, that might be relevant to young couples. Say things I still remember from those times, or shtickle maybe, but anyways, I'll tell you, there was it's not appropriate to speak. I think the Indian, when you speak to young couples, you're really speaking about prevention, because I deal a lot with adolescents, and one of the things that I notice is very often when I speak to somebody, sometimes I speak to adolescents who have problems already from first grade. Beyond all, they're kids with problems, with a long history of problems, but very often it's not like that, maybe even the right. Sometimes get adolescents who supposedly were the perfect children until they hit adolescence, and everything was fine, there was no problems, they're the best, the brightest, and the most wonderful. And very often it turns out that there were issues. Like, Taka had issues before too, but nobody knew about it. They were either very sad or very lonely or very troubled by various different things. And so when I start talking about when the problem first started, which it could have been when they were in fourth grade or fifth grade, and I ask them, did your parents know about it? And they'll very often answer, no, they had no idea. They had no idea until something blew up or something, you know, some major event happened, and then the parents found out about it. So, of course, I always ask them, why didn't you tell your parents? And what do you think the most often, 90% of the time, you know what the answer I get? Answer I get is I didn't want to disappoint them. Or sometimes I didn't want to cause them tsar. But that's usually what, derech klal, that's the answer I get. And if you want to know, if you want to think that, you know, sometimes you read in the papers or hear on the news there's some sort of scandal, or sometimes even the Jewish community that usually doesn't make it into the news, but they have, you know, a principal or somebody who found out he was molesting kids and was went on for 10 years and there were 50 victims, and you always wonder, like, how nobody found out about it? It's like amazing. Can you imagine that? 50 kids and not one of them told their parents. Usually the way the person is caught, they finally picks the wrong carbon, and that one told his parents and they found out. But can you imagine, it's a pella, even after all these years of practice, that how's a child, that something like that should be going on in a child's life, and he wouldn't tell his parents. And if I've talking met such kids later on in life, when they're already teenagers, and I ask them that question, that's the answer they gave me. They didn't want to cause their parents sorrow. They didn't want to disturb them.
So I thought of what the Panovitcher Rav says. The Panovitcher Rav said that a yosem is not someone who doesn't have someone to buy him things.
The maizdes who take care of yosemim could buy him more than the parents could afford him. Well, he had poor parents and couldn't afford to buy the child very much. And then he has no parents anymore, and then the maizdes take care of him. Sometimes they can afford to buy more than his parents could. What shot a yosem? A yosem is nobody to figure out what he needs. So when a child can't tell his parents what he needs and what's going on in his life, then he's never a yosem. So where does this come from? Where does it come from? Why is it that children won't tell their parents? So what the reason they won't tell their parents is because children are inherently extremely dependent on their parents. That's a teva of a child. And dependency creates something that we call the Stockholm Syndrome. What's the Stockholm Syndrome? In the days in the 70s when they had all the hijackings, I think it was at Tkufa when the Rishiva was hijacked. During that Tkufa, there was a famous case of a plane that was hijacked to Stockholm. And there was a group of hostages that were held for an extended period of time. I think it was a few weeks. I don't remember anymore, but it was an extended period of time. And after they were released, the people who took care of them noticed a very strange phenomena that the hostages started identifying with the hijackers. That they talk of good people, and it's not their fault because they were persecuted, and it's like they had no AIDS, and they're really wonderful people. So the people who studied this, who researched this, came to understand that when you're being held by somebody who's extremely powerful, and these hijackers had shot a few of the hostages earlier, so they knew the kayach of these hostages, of these the hijackers. And if you're under the power of an extremely powerful person and you're incredibly dependent on them, what would you rather believe? Would you rather believe that they're a shayim who for no reason will kill you? Or would you subconsciously rather believe they're really wonderful people who just because you didn't look at them right, that's why they gave it to you? Right? You'd much rather believe, it's much, much less scarier to believe that you're at fault than they're at fault. So same thing, children with parents, since they're extremely dependent on them, so therefore it's a pachad nairah that if any time if you have a chash, especially if you feel that you have to worry more about their needs than they're worrying about your needs, then it's a tremendous pachad. You don't want to say anything that's going to rock the boat. Actually, in this week's parsha, where it speaks about the birth of Yitzhak Avinu, there's a Peldik and Medrash. The Medrash says, "Le'nidnada arisa tchila le'bebeisa shel Avram Avinu." The first cradle of the rock was in Avram Avinu's house. What's up, Shah? It's a matnas kahuna over there in the Medrash Rabbah. He explains Shah like this: that there was a shinei hatava, that till Yitzchak, children were not born helpless infants. Are you mind shutting up the end? Sure. That until Yitzchak, children were born like horses. You know, horses shortly after birth are pretty much independent. They walk around. They take care of themselves for the most part. And only by, you don't have to shut her off. Yitzchak was the first one who was born. Before Yitzchak, there were no diapers, no pampers, no cribs, and there was no carriages. And Yitzchak was the first one who was born an infant. So, child, why did the Baruch Hu have to make such a dramatic shinei hateva? So he says, so the Yalkut Lekach Tai says a Gavaltik of Shad. He says that since Yitzchak was the first child who was raised up in Torah, and you have to give over to your children the Gantz of Torah with obligations and restrictions, so it's be very sure for a child to accept such a zach. No, Pshad, since the child is helpless and depend on you for many years, and you can shower the child with love and care and acceptance, so then it's much easier for the child, because the teva of a person, and there's a reason why the Bansha made it this way, except it's not for now, but there's a reason that the teva of a person is not to accept being forced by other people. Really, forcing a child to do something, Chil Jakobson, a famous mechanech in Eretz Yisrael, he always says that when you force a child to do something, it's by definition anti-chinuch. Sometimes you have to do it. There are situations where it's necessary, but it's a definition is anti-chinuch, because chinuch is the mechanechim for the future. And if you do something that arouses a resistance in the child, it's anti-chinuch. So in order to get around this problem, the Rebbeinu created such years of dependency that you can give so much to the child that he'll be more likely to be mekabel. Another reason for this dependency that I got to just thought of this week, because I heard in a tape from Matzah Shal Salman, he was talking about Kibud Avim. I think you connected to this. You brought down that the chinuch says that one of the time akra, the time mitzvahs for kibud av v'aim is when a child develops hakaras hatayif for the parents, they can then transfer it to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. Since we're not capable of being masik the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, so we have to, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is the ultimate authority figure. So by our primary authority figures of the parents, that sets the pattern. They're like models. Rabbi Kirzner, when he speaks about tefillah, he says that parents set the model for our understanding of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. So therefore, we can learn that we transfer that type of akaras hatayif we have for our parents for the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. Then I saw Rabbi Tzitzio says somewhere else he brought down in this inyan, the pasuk in Akev says, when Hashem chastises us, we should understand that it's not it's revenge, it's for our own benefit. And what kind of mashal do they give in order that we should understand it? It's saying, the same way when a father is miyaser his child, of course it's only not chas v'shalom, it's revenge, or because of their own hang-ups, or because they're angry that day, it's only for the type of the child. So maybe we can understand that that's also, we can understand that that's when the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is miyaser us. So it's unfortunate we've fallen many, many times from that period of time, and unfortunately today you can't use that mashal. Because if you tell most children that the reason how the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is miyaser because like your father, then he's going to be in big trouble, right? And it's not going to calm him down. He says, today we would only hope that parents would take a dugma from the Rebbeinu Shel Olam and try to be miyaser the way the Rebbeinu Shel Olam does. And you should know, and this all comes when parents abuse the dependency of a child. You know, there's an expression that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. That's what dictators, even if they start off with Kavanas Taivis, that's why it's too dangerous to have a monarchy, because either the ultimate type of government should be a monarchy, like a Malchus, right? But when you have that much power, it's very difficult not to let it corrupt you. And every parent has that power over a child. And it's very, very difficult. It's incredible in the sight not to corrupt, be corrupted by that power. And I must say that many patients who I see who suffer from anxiety and panic attacks, which is kimata magaif in most yeshivas, that one of the taimim is because many of them have, that's their image of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is pasha to that of a schoolyard bully, Rachmana Litzlan. And I'm not exaggerating a ki who's that. I once told my mechutin's mechutin, Rabbi Reinman, or his brother, my mechutin's brother, but before he became my mechutin's brother. this Rabbi Reimer wrote a sefer once called in English on the history. It's in history. What's it called? Pathways or something. One of the yeshivas sent it out from Lakewood, I think, as a fundraiser. So it's a wonderful sefer. It's in English about the history from a Torah perspective. So he writes that in the Ivda Avayda Zara, you know, there was two dinim in the Ivda Avayda Zara. You know, as we know that they believed in many gods rather than one God. He said, but there was another. Their image of what God was much different than the way we believe. They believe that if you read about the Greek, you know, mythology, the Greek gods were all the mamish aizvars from the biggest madregas. What made them gods? Because they were powerful and they lived forever. That's what made them gods. All they did was torture people, and you had to appease them. You didn't worship them; you appeased them to keep them off your back, like act like a bully. So I once bet him at a chasana, and I wrote him a letter at the time when I read it. I said that you should just know that Hagam, the most yeshiva bachim today, are not Ivda Avayda Zara and Mevchina, that they believe in many gods. Baruch Hashem, that's come across very well. But the Nakud of what the Baishan is a type of Haitiv, I must say that there's many Ivda Avayda Zara still among yeshiva life. And it's totally not their fault, because that's what they how they grew up experiencing this. I also once heard from Matthew Shaw Salman, he's talking about the Indian Kibbut Avayim, that he said, he brought down from the Chayoda. He said, even though the Tzad HaLoche, Kibbut Aveim, according to the Rav HaRishayim, is not that they control your life and tell you what to do. The Rajba, I asked Rav David Feinstein, he told me to pass contact to the Rajba and the other Rishayim will hold that Tzad HaDin, Kibbut Aveim, is only Machileyu, Mashkeyu, you have to bring him food, you don't have to pay for it, he has to pay to Mishalav. He'll give you the money, then you bring buying the food, you go to Kosher Delight, you get him a hamburger, and you have to not sit in his chair and invite to these halachis, right? Nobody ever tells us the children, they don't know this, but it's supposed to be kept a secret, nishva the kinder, but the maisa, that's halacha. He says that the chayadim says if you want to be mekayim the mitzvah with the hiddur mitzvah, then you should think that your parents are very special people. That's how you mekayim the mitzvah behidurai. So Rav Matisov asks, what do you mean? Let's say your parents are very simple people. They're not famous people. Not grace of Tamid HaChacham. Whatever, they're Pasha to Eden. So what are you supposed to like have delusions and think that they're famous? Like, what does the Chayyada mean? Manushach, if they're famous people, then they're famous people. Not. Rav Matisov said, no, Tarakashi, because to you they could be very special because they're your parents. So I want to be meisif on that, Bamiya's Daiti, that this works well if the parents did this first, if they set an example. To the parents, the child was special, not because he was on the honor roll, not because she was in the school play or the valedictorian, but because simply because they're your child, right? So then they attack a very special parents to you. That makes them very special. It's not a problem. And then it says little infants, you go to when a child is born and the father goes to the hospital and you look through the window and you see the child, every parent already thinks their child's the most wonderful, gorgeous, brilliant child, even though they did absolutely nothing. Right, and that's the way it's not supposed to be. And but the child, as a child gets older, if there's a shtickle, more expectations. But if the parents are reasonable in their expectations and they're supportive of the child, even when he has difficulties living up to their expectations, and they don't allow their own ego of wanting to have the most brilliant child around get in the way, so then they can continue building, and that's what creates self-esteem. Which any therapist will tell you that lack of self-esteem is probably the shayrish of 99.9 of all emotional problems. I'll never forget, many years ago, I was once speaking to a young boy, I think he was maybe 14 or 15 years old. He was a chassidish boy. And he came to me through the court system because he had been caught molesting little children at such a young age, which was quite a bit unusual. And I remember he was molested himself when he was young, and I asked him the same question, why didn't you tell your parents? And he told me because he was like the best kid in his class and the star kid in the neighborhood, and his parents had such nachas for him, he couldn't have the heart to break the news to them that something is wrong in paradise. So mainly he didn't tell them. This is another example of a typical, unfortunately typical scene. But what was interesting is that one of the questions that the legal system had is, what is the danger of him doing it again? So I asked him that question. I addressed the question to him. I said, what do you think the chances of you doing it again is? So he said, well, listen, I got into so much trouble, I probably wouldn't do it again. I said to him, well, this is the third time you got caught, so that doesn't seem to be working. So he says to me, he didn't think of that before, he says to me, so what do you think would stop me? So I said, a little self-respect. And with the saddest eyes you've ever seen on a 14-year-old, with tears coming down his cheeks, he tells me, boy, then I'm really in big trouble. I said, I know you're in big trouble. I want you to understand what your trouble is. Okay. Now, Now, in order for a child to develop self-esteem and a sense of security and to reduce the chances of anxiety problems in the future, a child has to feel that his needs is what's being addressed in his relationship with his parents, not their needs. Not 100% of the time, because then you become a martyr, and that's not good for children either, but at least the majority of the time. Somebody actually studied and came up with a figure, the optimal figure, 75% of the time. I'm not sure how clear that is a number, but there. But now, the difference between doing things for your children and for yourself is such a thin line, it's very, very easy to miss it. And you look back in this week's parsha, and you read about Hagar and Yishmael. Right? Hagar was sitting there in Nebuch with a child who's dying of thirst, and she was extremely agitated, and it bothered her so much she couldn't even stand looking at him in his dying of thirst. And she put him behind the bushes over there, and she was mamish until the mouth came and showed her where the water is. So it seems like a beautiful story of a parent who's mamish hurting for the child. Rosham Shmuel Fall Hirsch says really the story is very different. And he says that Stake, her ego was here in force. Why? Because Stake is very painful for a parent to see a child in such pain. But the child needs to be soothed, and the child you have to try as much as you can. Because if you have a sense of responsibility and duty to the child that overcomes the pain that you feel, that should become before your emotion, your own emotional pain. You know, there are some parents that have a hard time when they have to take the child to a doctor to get a shot. There's some parents, no, they can't do that. No, they can't tolerate having a shot. So who's that? The tzayach for the child or the tzayach for the parents? Like, whose feelings are being addressed here? So it's a very... The Ramban says, you know, because many times we feel very proud of our love to our children. You know, the Ramban says, he brings down over there by Yisus ben Olay Sishchutu B'yei Mechad, he brings down from the Mari Nevuchim, that the love of a parent to its offspring is even animals have it. We're not any different than animals in this gather. There's nothing special, nothing human in loving children. It's an animal instinct. And animals have the exact same feeling as humans have. So what's not between a human and an animal? A human should have a sense of obligation and duty. The Chazaynish put it a little different. I once saw B'Shem the Chazaynish. He said that our children need our respect much more than our love. And I've worked with very abusive parents, and I must tell you, they don't love their children any less than anybody else does. There's become no problem in love. Remember, many years ago, I spoke to a young man that I worked with who had all kinds of different problems. His parents had a very messy divorce that dragged on for years, and there was a lot of service in the family. And this boy was thrown out of probably more schools than exist in the United States than yeshivas. And whatever, Baruch Hashem, he straightened out. He did very well. He got married. And he once asked me to speak to his mother because he was having problems with his mother. What was her big taina? Her big taina was that he doesn't call her Erev Shabbos. She told me, tell me, Dr. Sorotskin, is it not reasonable for a mother to expect that her son should call Erev Shabbos to wish her good Shabbos? Does that seem to you like an unreasonable expectation? So I said to her, let me ask you, Mrs. So-and-so, do you like your son? So she's like taken aback and very insulting. She says, you ask me if I love my son? Were you crazy? Of course I love my son. I'd do anything for him. I said, I didn't ask you if you loved him. I didn't doubt that for a moment. I asked you if you liked him. She's a bit of an honest lady, and she thinks for a while, says, well, you know, we've been through a lot, and, you know, he does this and did that. And I said, I have no tainus on you whatsoever. I know you yourself suffered tremendously. It's not the terrorist tainus. Just a fact. The mice, you don't like it. I said, is it reasonable for you to expect that someone you don't like should call you every Erev Shabbos? Is that a reasonable expectation on your part? Okay, she was mufuyas. So, this goes on to a related topic, just to end off. For the many years, you know, whenever you go to Bar Mitzvah, I don't know if any of you have, I don't know if you have Bar Mitzvah's children, you have Bar Mitzvah Shamsun, when you'll have Bar Mitzvah's children, and you'll know, what is a bracha, maybe when you yourself spoke by a relative's Bar Mitzvah, you know, what is a bracha you give a child? You know, besides the Shavak Slice, design the grace of Tamil Chachim, besides that, what is the bracha you give a child? Say, the Bar Mitzvah bracha, that he should bring nachas to his parents. Right? Is that not something? You hear it every Bar Mitzvah, right? For many years I've been complaining about it, and my children know, and some of my friends, I borcha by every Bar Mitzvah, I say, what kind of crazy thing is that to tell a child? He should bring nachas to his parents. Who's taking the tire that they need to bring nachas to your parents? You have to bring nachas to Eberster, that's like a gewaltig bracha. No, if a child is zaka zeichet to bring nachas to the Eberster, so a lot of the parents should have enough sense to have nachas from that. But they tell the child to bring nachas to the parents. So, Baruch Hashem, I was zeichet, that somebody once brought my attention, somebody called me from Eretz Yisrael, that told me he saw on the sefer that I was mamish mechavim to the brisker rub. He faxed me from the sefer the page, that the Brisker Rav says there was a maisa happened there to Shrol. There was a parent who was a father who was very, very devoted to his children, and one of his father's relatives, was an uncle of his, was Mamshin Spol, and he asked him, "How could your children ever repay you for what you did for them?" So the father said, "Ches, I don't know. You know, children give you a sense of immortality. You live forever through your children." When he was a talmid of the Brisker Rav, this father, and he told the Brisker Rav what he said. The Brisker Rav told him that what you said is karev l'apikorsis. Why? He says the Banshim does not give parents children in order to have nachas. The Banshim gives, or to give them anything else at all. The Banshim gives parents children in order to give them an opportunity to be mizdamet HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The same way the Banshim gives us everything, and unfortunately, as we all know, we don't always give them nachas. The same thing, the child, you know, the parents have the opportunity to give without expecting anything in return. He says, Fashteitzach, I was mashmach chavanim to the second part. He says, Fashteitzach, you can give a parent a bracha, they should have nachas, like you give a parent a bracha, they should have gezunt and parnasa. That has nothing to do with the child. It's not something you tell the children. When you tell the parents, you say, one of the brachas you give that they should have nachas from their children. But it's not epis of bracha that you give to a child. So I think if we taka truly put our children's needs in front of, before our own, and have a sense of responsibility and duty to them, it's our responsibility to provide them with a happy life. That's heard from a Reuven Feinstein. That's a pshat shel av machnisa la'ilam hazeh. Doesn't mean give them checks and credit cards and cell phones. I mean, you can do that too, but what it means is that they should be happy. It's your job to see that they should be happy and not fakared, that it's their job to make you happy. If Taka did that, and if we let them be special without having to do anything special, then I'm afraid I'll be unemployed. I'm close to retirement age, so it's Nisha Zegefeld. Okay. Anybody has any questions? Somebody's calling in a question.
No, somebody was.
Who looked in the window?
Nobody cares. I will have to see it.
Yeah, sure.
Don't worry.
Who was that?
Okay, excellent. Okay, very good. 1457. Closer to M.
Shlomo?
Okay. Yeah. Don't worry.
Somebody had an accent on the way here?
No.
Oh. What to do this, you mean?
Yeah. Which for which?
No, all the way.
Spoiling kids. Okay, so let me tell you, if you have any interest in spoiling your kid, if you ever have in das, you want to spoil a kid, you have to know there's two ingredients, necessary ingredients, and otherwise it won't work.
First,
somebody asked a question about spoiling children, so that's very interesting. If you want to spoil a child, you have to do two things. You have to give them too much of what they don't need and too little of what they do need. One without the other doesn't work well. Having rich parents will not automatically make spoiled. There are many wealthy parents who bunch of them have very fine children, not spoiled. They're taka used to more, but doesn't make it spoiled. We're all used to more. Who today lives like they lived in the shtetl? You know, the parents don't live like they used to either, especially the children. You know, I heard a meister once, told the Gevoy, that there was a chassidish cheder that the menal did not allow the melamdim to smack the kids. So there was a whole uproar. Mamash was like, apikursus, what kind of chutzpah is this? It's you're changing a chadash asam and atayr, what kind of mishigas is this? You know, this is mishana from the minig. And they came with grace of tarumas to the menal. So menal answered a brilliant answer. He said like this, he said, it's takachu in Daltahein, all the kids were smacked up. I said, do you live like you lived in Daltahein? You live in the poverty and the persecutions, and the Yibar Hashem, you have two cars, you have a house in the country, and even the poor people don't starve anymore. I said, so why are you asking the kid to live like you live in Daltahein? You're not living like you lived in Daltahein. You're all too tired. So the Shazag is, if the kid is frustrated because they're not getting the love and attention and acceptance, which is even more important than love and attention, that they should get, so then they're tremendously frustrated and they feel a tremendous void and emptiness. So they fill it, so if you give them tchotchkes, So then they find happiness in tchotchkes, right? So then they learn that that's how you become happy. It keeps them happy for a little while, not for too long, but lamaisa gives them a shtickle happiness. So then they learn that if you want to be happy, you have to have things. So they go and they buy this and they buy that. Now, I tell very often parents who already have teenagers who are already in this matzav, and they drive the parents crazy, they have the most expensive clothes, and they have to buy $50 shirts and place alamizes. Yeah, it's not so expensive anymore, I don't know. But anyway, whatever the value of today. So I tell them, listen, right now you have to buy for him, because the cost of not getting it is much more than the cost of getting it. He says, now if you find some way to work out your relationship with him that he can be happy, then you'll find he doesn't need anymore. And one of my patients, a teenager, once told me that he sees he's getting better because he can wear the same shirt for 2 days now. So something that was b'chal not shaykh b'him before. And one other fellow told me that he noticed that when he went to buy a trench coat and he didn't have to have the most expensive one there anymore, when he on his own said, look, this is not really such an expensive one, he realized he was getting better. So I'm saying spoil is, they're really spoiled only because they're learning to use objects as a substitute for the affection and the acceptance that they need. Stop being nice to your kids doesn't make them spoil. Even if you do, let's say, this is probably more negay here, you know, let's say letting a baby sleep in your bed, or letting a little child sleep in your bed. It's not true that when you want it to stop, it'll be a little bit more difficult, because they're used to it, like anything that you're used to. And most girls today, you know, can buy a lot more clothes, you know, with their father's credit card than when they get married, you know. So you get used to it, so you learn to live with it. It's not the end of the world. You're, if your father owned a Lexus and you get married, you're in jail, maybe you're not about to drive a Lexus anymore, so you'll get over it. The kids are reasonably happy kids, so you just have to brush them on my children and slept in my bed, and then when they got old enough, I didn't want to sleep anymore, so I knew that for 1 week I won't sleep, and I can't have time for them for wanting to do what they used to. So I used to, you know, for 1 week, you didn't get over it yet. I would bring them back to their room, and if they come out again, I'd patiently bring them back. And I knew, I picked the week I didn't have to sleep so much, and they got used to it, that they don't sleep anymore there. So that's not spoiling. It's a spoiling is when there's a tremendous emotional need to be filled up with tchotchkes and things, because otherwise, you know, you can't, you know.
What? I don't remember.
What?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I hold
the kitchen.
Okay. No, it's all, either way.
No, it's dangerous. No.
There's not. Well, yeah, I'll call you back in a few minutes, right? It's not. No, listen, you could spare yourself the whole thing. It's a lot. It's a lot. You don't have to. I'm saying it's not a big deal. Sometimes it's more convenient for the parent, you know, instead of staying up, whatever. I'm just saying that's not a din in spoiling. That's a din in getting used to something. It's not the same as spoiling. You know?
No.
What am I?
Right?
It was a new luxury.
Yeah.
Because of necessity. If you have fancy cash now, you just grow up with them. If you attack your extra money, the kid goes up like that, and that's what he needs.
But Matisyo said a very interesting thing. He once gave a whole drush. He's against all these toys, you know, these elaborate toys. Not because of, not of luxury, it's interesting. He had a whole different twist on it. He said because the child is not mefateach, he doesn't develop his imagination. He said when he was a kid, they sat on a log. One day it was a car, the next day it was a truck, the next day it was an airplane. The double log, and they pretended this and pretended that. He says, now you buy a kid a truck, you know, with gears, with a motor. It doesn't develop that. But then he said at the end of the Ganze Drosche, he said, Obelamaisev, all his friends have one, you got to get him one too. You can't, you should be the only one who doesn't have it. So even that little more spoiling, so let's say a kid asks you for a bicycle. So all the friends have expensive bicycles, and you can't afford to get them such an expensive bicycle. So it really depends. See, first, like, if you happen to know, let's say if he's in a bad matzav and whatever, like he really desperately, or he doesn't, you know, so he doesn't feel that he, you know, so socially adept, and therefore he feels like he doesn't have any friends. You know, sometimes there's a strong emotional need for something, so borrow the money and get him the bicycle. If for some reason, but normal, it's not like that. Something you like to have because everybody else has. There's nothing wrong with telling us, and you know, first of all, don't have kindness on him for wanting it. Because then that's usually our reaction, because we feel bad that we can't afford him to buy what his friends have. So first, usually we attack him for being a baltaiva and wanting the bicycle. Right? That's not necessary. Right? You can tell him, listen, I'd love to get you a bicycle.
Years ago,
yeah.
I was then?
It was a problem. What do you mean? Aces for what?
Anything more acceptable, yeah. More like this. And so when the kid's like, how much hakar does he get out of what he's doing?
I'll tell you what hakar is. Hakar is not, he doesn't have an intellectual capacity for hakar. But hakar is, he picks up our feelings. You know, there's a pelvic avoid I saw from Tanach Leibowitz in the end of the Sefer Chedush Alev, a Chumash. I remember the avoid. I remember where he says it, but he's being up from Zechariah Novi. There's a pasuk in Tanakh that says that, whatever, you know, the pasuk criticizes what the Gemara says that that's going on Zechariah, that he caused a murder, he was responsible for a murder, and for being Machshel God's Klal Yisrael. What was the Maizeh? When he got up to say Nevuah in the Beis HaMikdash, B'Shem Hashem, it says Vayidaber Ma'al Ha'om, I think it was the Lashon, it says Ma'al Ha'om, and then they got very mad at him, they got upset at him, Vayigrimu HaSebavon, they stoned him in the Beis HaMikdash and he got killed. It was not a Gevaltik Kitchik for Klal Yisrael. So the Chazal tell us that Zechariah is to blame for it. His fault. What was his fault? Because Vayidaber Ma'al Ha'om, he spoke a shtickle down to the people. Right? So Henoch says, look, we're talking about a Novi Hashem here, we're not just talking about anybody. So, Shteitzach, you know, Chashashon, you didn't have Gaiva, and it wasn't anything like that. Right? So, Vos Meinta, you can talk about a Dakis, Shibidakis of some tiny feeling of superiority. Right? Mam is something, Azak Kleinekite. Right? You know, that, and they picked it up. He says a person could feel the other person's feeling. So, Shaz, you have a 3-year-old, and they're acting like 3-year-olds act. Right? It can be quite troublesome sometimes. Right? The child is very often, you know, what happens? Like, when you have a child, you have a little child, and you meet a friend, and they want to, what do they ask you about your child? What is the typical question? What's your mother's? What do they ask? They're not listening yet. What? I'll give you Yashin. Okay. Have a mice with that. All right. But what do you ask if you want to know about the child? How the child, is he a good baby? Is she a good baby? Isn't that what they ask? I always want to know, how do you become a bad baby? What do you do? What does it mean if you're a bad baby? Because if you don't sleep at night well, so then you're a bad baby? It's an expression, but I don't know. I just think it somehow reflects that somebody would have a tiny on the kid because he doesn't sleep. You know, you could say he's a difficult baby. That would be a reasonable question. But whether he's a good baby or a bad baby? No, it's a pellet. No. So I'm saying your feeling, right? That's why I'll tell you, I'll give you, I can prove it to you, right? If your baby is crying or is unhappy 2 o'clock in the afternoon in your home, you could probably soothe them. What happens if your baby's crying too? Isn't it so much difficult 2 o'clock in the morning to soothe the baby? Why is it so much more difficult? Because you're much more upset at them, right? Because you're upset at them. Why are they disturbing your sleep? It's a natural reaction. So you're all uptight. When I found an Aitzah, if you want an Aitzah for it, I discovered when I was in that position. Is that going to work for here? Okay. What?
My Aitzah
is don't go be glitched. They put me in the first time playing if they get to the end. That's a school. I like that. All right, but one Aitzah I found is just. When you get up, you decide, I said, I'm not going back to sleep anymore. I'm up for the night. No? You're calm, forget it. Today I'm only sleeping 3 hours. That's it. I'm up. And that's it. So you become calmer, and they pick up your calmness. It's a pella, you know? They manage to pick up. No, they're not the worst. No? Word.
Well, you look at sleep like a lobby.
Yeah. Today I don't need it.
Sleep
in the lobby. No. When the kid's 3 years old, it's swimming in the body, it could be in sleep.
Right. Yeah. So anywhere along.
The needle could really be tormenting you.
Oh, yeah.
Good word. He's up to T in the dictionary.
But when you're. It's really at any age. At any age, it starts to be young, and when they're teenagers, the taina always is, let's say a kid's not, the biggest difficulty is, I guess, if you know what's difficult for a child, let's say you happen to know, that before the learning disability thing became a grace of Zach, right? So what happens when a kid didn't learn? So he was stupid, lazy, doesn't care, and he got ciclopped, right? Because of the soup. Now, you know, they have a Zach learning disability, so okay, so people take a different perspective. But the truth is, even in those days, the decent rabbeim and the decent teachers, even though they didn't understand why the kid couldn't learn, they assumed there must be some reason. He probably doesn't enjoy being miserable. That's part of the shaka svar, right? That somebody doesn't enjoy being miserable. It's a big chin, like Shimon, the veld is not makubal, the svar. People actually think the kid is doing it to himself. It's a very well-known expression. What it means exactly, for years I'm trying to figure out, I haven't figured out what it meant. But there's such a makubal dikazah. But if you assume, so there, in those days, if a kid couldn't sit still, they didn't know anything about ADD, so what they do? They gave him jobs, you know? Every 10 minutes they sent him to the office to get an eraser and then, you know, put these papers in order. And they kept him busy and kept him out of trouble, and he got through school that way. You understand? But the musig was, the Mestami is not happy about it. He probably doesn't enjoy much of the concept of laziness. Right? It's interesting, the Rav Chaim Vital, who's not known to be a psychologist as far as I know, at least professionally, but he says that the Sheirish of Atzlus is Atzlus. Right? Yeah, that's a Sheirish. That's a, from being depressed. A normal person. I will tell you. Also says it.
Come here.
Yeah.
No,
okay.
No.
Okay.
Nothing but the
yeah.
Same
code. Yeah. So what's a no. Chat?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I
don't know so he says like this that you think of Pashid, you know, it's like this. Let's say a guy. Let's say Shiva Bacher. You can command that shit. He's on vacation. Right, and the hotel he's in has a minion at 7 o'clock. And he says, "Listen, I get up 7 o'clock every day on vacation. What do I want to get at 7 o'clock?" So he decides to get up at 9 o'clock and daven v'yichidah. So you want to say why? So you can say that could be atzlus taka. That even on vacation you should get up, and you should learn maybe a little musar taka. That would be great. So that even when you're on vacation, you know, it won't kill you if you go to minion, right? So the marshal. That I could. Well, let's say a guy sleeps every day till 12. The guy's in yeshiva every day, he's sleeping till 12. Is atzlus a reasonable explanation for it? It makes absolutely no sense. His life is miserable. I mean, even Atzlus has to have, you know, even the Yitzhar has to make sense. And I think of a marshal, if somebody's near a fire, and the fire is getting closer and closer, and he's turning red, and he's starting to blister, and he doesn't move, is it rational to say the reason why he's not moving is because he's lazy? The question doesn't make any sense. Either he's in shock, or he's paralyzed. I don't know, it has to be some other explanation. Laziness is not an explanation for a person messing up his life. You know, it usually means the guy's depressed, and therefore he can't function normally. Right, so that's so I'm saying the attitude that you have is much more important than the Eitzah. That one of the problems with parenting classes is that they focus on techniques. You know, do this for this problem. You have this like a Chinese menu. You know, and it doesn't work because the problem is in the attitude. Actually, somebody studied. I once found that somebody actually studied it, and what he did was he gave parents. He took two groups of mothers. One group were mothers of troubled children, kids who were having big problems, and one other mother. And he showed them video clips of normal behavior, like, say, of a mother telling a kid, you know, he's still playing, says, all right, John, it's time to go to sleep. And the kid responds like children do, no, come on, I want to finish this, I don't want to go to sleep, whatever. And all they asked the mothers is to write a description of what they saw. That's all that. There was such a difference between the two groups of mothers, it was amazing. The mothers with kids who weren't problematic wrote a normal kid. He doesn't want to go to sleep. You know, he doesn't want to go to sleep. They wrote it as a normal thing. The other mothers wrote descriptions. This is a kid who's being rebellious, who's trying to be in control of his mother. You know, who's being who's trying to torment his mother. You know, they view it as in a different surah. And if somebody comes and tells me on their 4-year-old that he's being manipulative, then we know in big trouble. No, but I've heard that. I've heard on infants. A mother once told me about her infant that she's manipulative. So where can you go with that? And the kid picks it up. The kid picks up that you're really mad at them. So, you know, so they this is our gosh, like Mamish Dakis.
I once heard of some doctors speaking about parenting.
Yeah.
I think it was a Jewish one that had some parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doctors told him,
yeah.
He explained to your kid,
yeah.
That yesterday it's my time. I gave it, it's my time. I gave you a time, I gave you time.
That's it, you used it up. Meter ran out.
So I done with the kid, yeah. Dog, yeah. With the,
yeah.
I gave,
yeah.
You time,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Nothing,
yeah.
Wrong.
It's
true, though.
Yeah, listen, again. Within limits, you know, a kid can know if there's nothing particularly wrong with him, the parents can take a nap, you know, and they can learn to entertain themselves. I'll tell you, somebody studied this and found that if healthy children's parents put the children ahead of their own 75% of the time. I'm all kids, I go on vacation, chais, whatever, you know, there's such a job, but you know, the musig that saying it that way is a simple word.
Is it normal to be crazy or extra to the kid when he doesn't
have? Yeah, what I'm trying to hear you, the way?
Extra to the kid.
Extra?
When the kid doesn't have any.
Extra what?
Why her nicely dressed? Oh,
yeah.
She doesn't need a nicer dress.
Oh, you mean if it's. What do you mean?
Oh,
that's
the
kid's
in the
street. I don't know. I
have to be careful.
Yeah.
In any solution.
That's right. I used to say.
No, because I heard about
Rajmi. Yes.
Because of the Amish, I know what Amish is.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
said there is such a thing, the sad parents, there is such a thing as not giving good time to the kid.
Now, what he speaks about good time. I just heard a tape. Oh, yeah, I heard that tape from him. Right? I heard about good time or something.
Now, what that means, giving things when the kid doesn't
need it. Yeah, yeah. No, about it like this. No. There is such as that. I got had a patient once, an adult who used to go crazy. His wife used to buy so many dresses for the girls that they used to plead with her to stop buying dresses. There was no place in the house to keep it. She obviously had a need to buy him dresses. Obviously, it wasn't the tzarich of the child. No, what you're saying is different. There's no reason to increase the standard of living. Right. There's no necessity. So again, if all her friends, she doesn't have to live in a standard less than her friends, but to create luxury, make necessity out of luxury, is something not a. And it's not like good style to routine, it's not practical. I mean, like, what's the point? Like, why do it? Right. That's what's the danger.
He said the kids already, when they're going in ninth grade, the parents take them to a stroll.
Yeah.
Already by high school, I'm going to go far.
Increases pressure. Look, in Ruchnisis too, I mean, I don't think Ramesh has said Lagabi that, but I'm quite a dog of pleasure. Today, any self respecting bar mitzvah bacher has to make a CMM Mishnais by bar mitzvah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a dog of pleasure. Otherwise, it's not eat. But it doesn't become a bar mitzvah anymore. Yeah. It's almost retarded, you know. It's like, I'm serious. That's a tremendous pressure that the kids that you know, there's no geschmack anymore in doing anything. No, there's no geschmack in anything. There's no geschmack in learning because you're never happy with anything. I'll just finish with a word from Rav Hudner. Okay, it's like a sugepas. It's one of the most beautiful things I've quoted a million times. Okay, well, this is one of the most beautiful. I hold it's such a pelvic as that. He writes, it's in the Sefer HaZikaron. And he has beautiful lashon, obviously, it's always the lashon is beautiful. But he says that when a person becomes a Baal Madrega, the teva is that he no longer has a geshmak in being a pashut to yid. Right? Because he's a shit Baal Madrega. He says that's a tremendous tragedy. That even when you become a Baal Madrega, the geshmak in being a pashut to yid has to flow through your veins. It's mamish for this reason, because otherwise the minimum standard keeps on going up. I have Bachman come to me are severely depressed, who are doing well. My mamish, at least they did. Maybe then once they got depressed, they stopped, but they were learning and fine. But it was never enough. Whatever they were learning was pashut. They absolutely not shaykhlen to have a geshmak in their learning, and everything that becomes like you know, as a kid, the kid has a gets a 90. So like you know, even in this day and age, your parents will say, "Where are the other 10 points?" And yes, Beis Yaakov teachers, the decent students, the good students, if you give them a 95, the mom burst out crying in hysteria. Mom is very, very, very common. So sometimes it's because either the parents will have times than them, because if the kid's very bright, they should be able to do better, because they didn't study enough. Or some because that's like the avira, you know. You have to. I remember the pressure. My kids used to get very high grades. I used to offer them money to get below an 80.
Really?
Even if they didn't take me up on it. I want to know that. That's the avira. I used to tell them if you get a. It was mostly the girls, not the boys. Anyway, it's not such a big problem with boys, but at least by grade. But I'm saying with the girls. Remember, I used to give prizes if you get over under an 80?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, yeah.
I never did it for the prize.
What?
I never got lower even for the prize.
All right. Rabbi Friend has on a tape a Maisa he says over, but he brings out a different libud from it. He says a famous story that the Panovich wrote once had a surgery and he came to a hotel in Switzerland. And there was a wealthy businessman who used to come to the hotel with his family, but he was away on a business trip. So for that job, it's his wife. And how old was the kid? I think a 5-year-old kid were there in the hotel. So when the Panovich Rav came, he was recuperating, and there was no room for him on the first floor. There was only on the second or third floor. It's hard for him to go there. So we're trying to find him a room on the first floor. So they said, we'll ask this lady if she's willing to switch. So they asked this lady, and she said, of course, it would be my pleasure to give him my room. But you have to ask my son, too. He's also in this room. So they asked the boy, and the boy was also masking. Okay, so they gave the room. So before Shabbos, or maybe after Shabbos, the Rebbetzin came to this kid, and she said she wants to give him a chocolate, because he gave a room to the rabbi. No, he doesn't want a chocolate. No, she's going to a store, she wants to buy him something. No, he doesn't want anything. She said, I want to give you something. She says, you know what, I want a letter that if I ever come to Panovich, I'll be accepted. Oh, I didn't start. I was supposed to start the letter from the Maisa from then. The Maisa said this book comes upon it. It's in the very friend, one of his books or in the tape. No, yeah, they didn't want to. First, he wasn't accepted. So he pulls out a letter and he says he wants to speak to the Rebbetzin. He shows it to the Rebbetzin. He got accepted with this letter. This was a letter that he got when he was 5 years old. The mother kept it in safe. So Rabbi Friend wants to bring out the mice, the Indian that the bacher was makir, that this was like that age, you know, that this is more chashuv than a chocolate or a toy. But I said there's a different lesson here, that the mother in her chachmah, she could have said, well, you have to ask the kid to give the room to the panovich rov. No, first of all, he's also a human being. You know, he has something to say about it too. Now, for states, if he would say no, she would probably try to convince him to say yes. I mean, that's not the nekuda. And Mustami, he, you know, had enough seichel in 5 years old. You're talking about a gadol, you know, and that wasn't a problem. But even more than that, he has a chelik in the mitzvah. Imagine the feeling that he has that he gave up his room for the panovich rov. Not sad that he was made to give up his room. It's a pelad bikulim.
Agav, that mice is not from Ribbitzacher Friend. I remember now that I heard it on a tape from Reb Pesach Krohn. Okay, thank you very much, and everybody have a good vach.